thoroughly. Well, what do you want to talk about on this Monday edition? The lines are wide open. The topics are really wide open. Although, let me tell you what I think I'm going to do with you today. I'm going to actually challenge you on something that I think we better do before the season gets away from us. I want to challenge you on this whole issue of 9/11. I want to make sure that we are able to consider and reflect upon all of the angles that are legitimate with regards to what occurred 10 years ago for us on 9/11/2001. I, like yourself, I'm sure you heard many, many magnificent stories about God's mercy and His grace to the victims of 9/11, particularly to the survivors and many of the folks who were there and went through that horrific and tragic assault on our nation. And the testimonies were phenomenal. God's hand was absolutely exquisite in the lives of so many people. Just, and this is how God works. He manifests His secret glory in the midst of public tragedies. And for believers, we can detect it and we can see it, and we thank God for it. I have often said, until Jesus comes, or until we enter into that last stage of darkness called the tribulation period, we will always see a red or crimson thread of God's mercy running through every judgment that takes place in this world. So that while the enemy may seek to create havoc and destruction and mayhem, and he will, and he's definitely geared up to do that in this generation in which you and I live. Nevertheless, because God sits on His throne and is sovereign over the events and affairs of this universe, He will always weave into calamity His grace and mercy to show those that are His and those that He is calling that He is there with them in the midst of such fire. But what I want to challenge you on is this wholesale writing off and dismissing, this dismissive nature on the part of the consensus to suggest that anyone at all in America who has not already demonstrated a respect for the grieving folks who have experienced loss of loved ones during this time, and the respect for our soldiers who are fighting wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and other places in relationship to 9/11. After having set forth our concern for those types of things, what we must ask is this question: are we unpatriotic if we, as American citizens, exercise our rational thinking skills of skepticism and suspicion for the inadequacies of facts presented by our government and the complicit media, which has produced a noteworthy contingent of protesters to 9/11, or at least the 9/11 official account? Let me say that again. Is a person unpatriotic, not respectful of our government, if we query the official account of 9/11 as has been proffered by our media and by our government as to what really took place? Is it wrong for us to say we do not accept what your account officially has given to us because there are too many unanswered questions, and we have a list of noteworthy protesters who are not just people on the outside, your so-called fringe people that you so-called mainstream reasonable thinking folks would like to dismiss as conspiracy theorists and kooks and nuts? These are individuals who were directly affected by 9/11. Let me just give you a list of persons for which I want to exercise your senses this hour. Are you and I blinded by a normalcy bias and by a consensus principle that if the media says this is the way that it is, and if the government says that this is the way that it is, then indeed that's the way that it is, and any other perspective, any other voice, any other set of assumptions and assertions concerning the facts are to be discounted? In other words, let me ask you a question even before I lay out this list, before we go to our break, because I want to read something to you at the bottom of the hour that I am sure will stir your thoughts And then we will enter into the foundation of this particular line of questioning. Let me ask you the question. Does our government lie to its citizens? Does our government lie to its citizen? Is there a precedent with our government from the beginning of its inception that it lies to its citizens when it believes that lying to its citizens is in the best interest of government agendas and purposes, that it knows that if it had to let its citizens know, then its citizens would exercise its due right in either removing our government leaders or demanding a change in the government as a wholesale. So let me ask you the question before we get into these issues. Does our government lie? And is it therefore not the prudent right of constitutionally bound citizens, for which our founding fathers were wise enough to make sure that freedom of speech and freedom of religion and freedom of dissent and freedom to bear arms was established in the Constitution, just in case our government exercised Napoleon-type ideology and early Roman-type ideology and ideologies of governments around the world, where indeed they have said the only way you can actually govern a people from the standpoint of the powers that be is to lie to the people constantly. That is an ongoing fundamental premise with government. When it knows that it's going to do things that are not popular with its citizens, it has to lie to them. I'm going to tell you, when we come back from our break, I get through talking with Pat Vitucci, I'm going to actually lay out for you a list of persons that I consider noble contingents who protest 9/11 because of not the fact that it had occurred, not the fact that there are things that occurred in 9/11 that are absolutely undeniable and incontrovertible, but because there were things that are said that are inconsistent. There's evidence that's been left out that does not correspond with the actual empirical facts that are already copied on tape and on video and on CD, information that our media never ever talks about. I want to talk to you about it, and I want to see, do I have a listening audience that's well aware that our media often plays much more of a propagandist role than it does exposing the truth? And I'm going to read to you an eloquent, I mean an absolutely eloquent, eloquent speech by one of the most famous persons in the world, for whom, when we identify this person, you will know that those of us who are often suspicious of our government are not kooks, simply because we believe that conspiracy is part of the fundamental framework of governments around the world since the fall of Adam and Eve. That men and women and rulers have always conspired together to get rid of the rule of God and the witness of God and the people of God and truth in the world, as can be borne by many testimonies in the scripture. Conspiracies are simply the gathering of groups of people under privacy and secrecy to do things that they know if they were exposed for, they might be halted or thwarted in their purposes, and thus they conspire to do it. Are we functioning under a conspiratorial premise in terms of global agendas, national agendas, and the dialectical process that governs our so-called political society? Does our government lie to us? I'm going to talk to us about some of those things to see what kind of citizens you and I are. We should be prudent citizens. We should be wise citizens. I think we should be constitutional citizens. And if we're constitutional citizens, then you would understand that as a presupposition, it's possible that our government lies, and we have to be ready to do all diligence to make sure that we get at the facts. After all, we're supposed to be, right, a free nation. This is the Monday edition of Lifeline. The number is 1-888-367-5329. Do not go away. You're going to learn a lot of things that you don't know, have some things confirmed that you do know, and you might be mad, but you might end up knowing what you don't know that you should know. If you are such a person as do not spend a whole lot of time on the issues that are taking place in our world, whether our nation or other nations in the world, I understand there is so much going on in our world that it really belies the effort that is required to be able to stay in the know, or at least relatively so, with events that take place in the world. But with technology, the ability for technology to bring us into the whole world scenario within moments through the media of television, internet, and other sources, we can be informed. We have also a much more faithful form of historical archiving today than we ever have in our life, so that we can educate ourselves on things that have transpired in the past. Now, why do I say that? Because when you read your Bible, for those who would like to suggest or imply that we live in what are called absolutely parallel worlds, where there's a world of spiritual things that's separate from the world of physical things, and the twain never meet, you won't ever read such things in the scriptures. You will never read that the God that sits on his throne in the universe is not intricately involved in both worlds, the world of the secular, pagan, heathen, and the world of the sacred believers, along with those who would seek to assault and overthrow the revelation of God in the life of his sacred people. That those two worlds are not so mutually exclusive that they don't sometimes not only run parallel, but they merge and they syncretize for God's own objective and purpose. Let me give you a foundation for what I am talking about. If you take the Bible's testimony of the origin of man, and you go from Genesis chapter 1 to Genesis 11, what you find is the creation of nations out of the people of God, starting with Noah and his three sons, their three wives, and Noah's wives. And God gives us a prophetic word in Genesis 9 through 11 concerning the nations, not only their origin, but their characteristics and their behavior patterns. And when you look carefully, the people of God have always been sprinkled in and among those nations. And when you read biblical prophecy carefully, you find that while God may not save every nation or everyone in every nation, God has always had plans for the nations, even if they didn't come into a savable state. For instance, when God prophetically set forth the warning to national Israel that if they disobeyed his covenant, he would take them and cast them to the four winds, which means that they would be brought into subjugation and slavery of all the nations of the world that were dominant in the days of Israel 1500 years before Jesus. Egypt ruled, and Babylon ruled, and Medo-Persia ruled, and Assyria ruled, and Nineveh ruled, and Greece ruled, and ultimately Rome ruled. All these powerful nations that are written in the historical archives of our world, which have just phenomenal records of events that have taken place, just endless stories, of which when you read them carefully, you can find a trace of the sovereignty of God involved in them all. From the lowest to the highest, from the poorest peasant to the greatest of monarchs and kings, will they hint at the reality of the presence and providence and power of God. And then, not too infrequently also, you find God's people sprinkled among them, and that's what he did with Israel when he scattered them to the four winds. They took the revelation of the true and the living God with them to those different nations. What's my point? That God has borne record of himself to every nation in the world, as he is doing today, so that you and I as Christians don't get to have the comfortable lifestyle, our worldview, that we are not to be interested in what takes place in this world. This is our Father's world. He runs this world, and we need to know these things. More than that, we need to be prudent and wise toward those things that are taking place both in our world, around the world, and in this nation, which has touted itself to be a Judeo-Christian nation. With regards to God's covenant purposes with nations around the world, whether he saves them or not, it still behooves us as the people of God to function in a way where we know what's going on, so that we can be wise in terms of what we do and how we act. With that being said, I want to remind you once again that we are going to contemplate for this hour the things that have transpired over the last 10 years with regards to not only the official account given to us by our media and by our government concerning 9/11, and I know they would love, many of them would love for this matter to just go away. But there are too many things about 9/11 that occurred that cannot go away, and the credibility of this sort of stubbornness on the part of people who will not let it go away has to do with people who were actually in the World Trade Center when it occurred, in both buildings, and those folks who were there when that strange building number 7 came down among them. There are individuals who lived and survived who are working in the World Trade Centers when they fell, who have sought to give their testimony and views as to what really occurred, whose testimonies were not accepted in the official 9/11 account. There are family members who have had deaths that had taken place with their family members who worked in those World Trade Centers, who after listening to the 9/11 account and considering all that transpired in the closeness of their own experience, proximity-wise, they are not satisfied with what the official account of 9/11 has been. There are professionals, there are doctors, there are police officers, there are firemen, there are military men who have been involved directly in the situation in 9/11, folks, that will not let this thing rest. Now, when you have a litany of testimonies of individuals that have been there and saw what occurred and want to voice their stories, how can we turn a deaf ear to what they have to say? We have people who work in Congress, legislators, who are demanding a revisal and a reopening of the 9/11 Commission because they feel as if too many things were left out. What's going on? 1-888-367-5329. What's taking place that requires a continual investigation until the soul can rest, that it has done justice to examining and pursuing all of the factors that go into what occurred on 9/11? What's taking place? Now, let me ask you the question before I go to the break. As much as we are careful to pay homage to our military men and our police officers and our firemen who sacrificed their lives then and now during the 9/11 event, and as much as we are careful to be empathetic with those who lost their lives, loved ones, the lives of their loved ones in 9/11 that day, that awful day, once we have acknowledged sufficiently that these things have occurred, why is it wrong for us to now then investigate whether or not those who are authorities have actually done prudence and justice at investigating what went wrong? You see, this has to do with establishing a stability of consciousness as a nation, wondering whether or not our guards were down, wondering whether or not our watchmen were on the wall, wondering whether or not we have been infiltrated by enemies. All these are valid questions, and I want to talk to you about them as well. When I come back, like I said, I want to read a speech by someone I think we all know, and I'm going to ask you to tell me who it is. I'm not going to tell you. I want you to tell me who it is, and then we're going to take up the premise of his argument, because he warned us. He warned us in his great speech of things that are taking place now and will take place in the future. What I want to do is read a speech. I want you to tell me what it is. This speech will actually establish the premise for the integrity of our investigation and our concern as to why so many people are asserting that the whole 9/11 event was not properly dealt with. And I want to read this speech because the individual who wrote it and actually gave it was an individual that most of us respect highly around the world. So it's going to take about 5 minutes. Listen to the speech. And for those of you who are holding, just hold on. I want to read through this speech. And I want to ask you, do you know who this person is? Quote, "My topic tonight is more sober and of concern to publishers as well as editors. I want to talk about our common responsibilities in the face of a common danger. The events of recent weeks may have helped to illuminate that challenge for some, but the dimensions of its threat have loomed large on the horizon for many years. Whatever our hopes may be for the future for reducing this threat or living with it, there is no escaping either the gravity or the totality of its challenge to our survival and to our security. A challenge that confronts us in unaccustomed ways in every sphere of human activity. The deadly challenge imposes upon our society two requirements of direct concern, both to the press, that is to the media, and to the president." Which you didn't notice, he was concerned about the ruler of the world. "Two requirements that may seem almost contradictory in tone, but which must be reconciled and fulfilled if we are to meet this national peril. Quote, I refer first to the need for far greater public information, and second, to the need for greater official secrecy. The person writing this article and speaking, rendering this speech is asserting that there was a sentiment that developed that said we need to have greater public information, and secondly, we need to have greater official secrecy. He goes on, quote, the very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. I agree. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to, watch this, secret societies. We are inherently and historically, as a free people, opposed to secret societies, secret oaths, and secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweigh the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its, listen, arbitrary restrictions. Do you notice what this person says? There's little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there's little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. Why would we seek to ensure the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it, the author of this speech said. And there is a very grave danger that an unannounced need for increased security will be seized. Let me say that again. And there is a very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious, watch this, to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment, that I do not intend to permit to the extent that it is in my control. That's what the author says. I will not let it happen if I can. And no official of my administration, whether his rank is high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, to cover up our mistakes, or to withhold from the press and the public the facts they deserve to know. Wow. But I do ask every publisher, every editor, and every newsman in the nation to reexamine his own standards and to recognize the nature of our country's peril. In time of war, the government and the press have customarily joined in an effort based largely on self-discipline to prevent unauthorized disclosures to the enemy. In times of clear and present danger, listen to the words, in time of clear and present dangers, the courts have held that even the privileged rights of First Amendments must yield to the public's need for national security. That's true. Today, no war has been declared. And however fierce the struggle may be, it may never be declared in the traditional fashion. Our way of life is under attack. Those who make themselves our enemies are advancing around the globe. The survival of our friends is in danger, and yet no war has been declared. No borders have been crossed by marching troops. No missiles have been fired. If the press is awaiting a declaration of war before it imposes the self-discipline of combat conditions, then I can only say that no war ever posed a greater threat to our security. If you are waiting for a finding of clear and present danger, then I can only say that the danger has never been more clear and its presence has never been more imminent. Listen, it requires a change in our outlook, a change in tactics, a change in missions by the government, by the people, by every businessman, by every labor leader, by every newspaper. I want you to listen to these words before I go to break. This is by one of the highest ranking individuals in the world. And tell me if this individual is a reasonable person. Quote, for we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. On infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted, listen, vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economics, scientific, and political operations. There is more. I have to take a break. Who do you think is speaking here, and what are their real concerns, and are they valid today in the year 2011? Pose the question to you, is it meritorious or is it unpatriotic to at least consider, diligently consider the loopholes and questions that have emerged since 9/11, particularly when you have an array of people who are valid in their concerns, as close as individuals who were actually part of that horrific day? Should not their voices be heard? And then I share with you part of a speech, and I'm asking you, do you know who the author of this speech is, of whom I am now reading? I hope I didn't do too much injustice. When he opened his speech, he was speaking to mostly the media, while he was speaking also to the whole nation. I want to quote one portion before I go to the phone again. Who was the author of this speech? Some of you diligent folks out there should know. I quote, "For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economics, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters, listen to this, its dissenters are silenced, not praised. No expenditure is questioned. No rumor is printed. No secret is revealed." Who sent forth that speech? And I'll tell you, he knows, or he knew, what he was talking about. He had so much of a personal interest invested in what he said. And yet, ladies and gentlemen, what he said was the proper manifestation and execution of a watchman on the wall warning the whole nation of whom he was responsible that these things were occurring, and if they should take a complete measure of foothold in our nation, we would never be able to stop its operation. And I'm here to tell you, after several decades, he is right. Who am I speaking of? 1-888-367-5329. Let's go to line one and talk to Patty. Patty, thank you for your patience. How are you?
Thanks. Very good. I love that speech. My goodness, I can't even guess.
It's awesome, isn't it?
That would be, and you said decades, so that's the clue.
Yes, it is. I'm trying to help people because I'm not getting any phone calls. Yeah, I guess people just don't remember. That's the one of the sad things. We just don't remember. But years and years ago, we actually had really bright, clairvoyant, articulate, and eloquent leaders who could actually tell us things that were so truthful and important, couch it in language that was clear but ambiguous. And this speech speaks to where we are today.
I can hardly wait to hear who it is.
Okay, so now tell me, I'm sorry. Tell me what your observation about our government lying to us. Is that a legitimate question, or am I out of bounds?
Oh, it is for sure a legitimate question, and the reason I'm answering this is that I was immersed over the weekend in accounts of 9/11.
Okay.
And on C-SPAN especially, there was an author who had written a book about it, John O'Neill, who died in the World Trade Center. He was an FBI agent.
Right, John O'Neill.
Huh?
I know. Go ahead on. I know of whom you're speaking.
Yes, and he had so much truth that he was trying to speak, and his boss didn't like him, and he got fired. And then the man went and died in the World Trade Center. But that said, I truly, I mean, you don't even have to listen to people's opinions. You don't have to listen to the Republicans, the Democrats, the Tea Party. All you had to do was listen to recorded tapes of what was going on during that time to know that the government was lying to us about certain events. But I do have to say this, is that I still appreciate our freedom. I can call you on Payback and know that I am safe from retribution.
For now.
I feel free.
For now.
I feel free.
For now, Patty, for now, that's the case for now. And I say this, I agree with you. One of the deceptions that's taking place in our culture, though, today, is that our freedoms are partial freedoms. They are not complete freedoms. So if you listen to me in the second hour, I'm actually going to expand on this. I want everyone to listen to me carefully. We are experiencing what is called partial freedom, not legitimate freedom. It's a partial freedom, and I do thank God for it. But as our founding father said, freedom comes at a cost. If we don't preserve it, we certainly will lose it. Now, let me ask you, is there a theological question about 9/11 that you have?
I do. I have a theological question. And that is, you know, we have heard all these incredible miracles, these first accounts of people being saved from the flames, being pulled through walls, things like this.
Correct.
But my question is, we have to know that some of our fellow believers in Jesus died in the flames.
Correct.
Suffered being burned. So why some and not others? You know, what is the answer?
Excellent.
What is the great answer?
Excellent question, and I'm going to have to take you off of the air. Excellent question, because it should have been rendered in the public. But I'm going to answer that question for you, okay? So I'm going to have to ask you to take it off the air. I'm going to catch my last caller. We got to take a break. And over on the other side, if you just listen, Patty, I will answer that question. Thank you. Let's go to line two and talk with George from San Francisco. George, are you there? Hello, George. Did we lose George? Going once, going twice.
Yes, I am here.
George, are we there?
No, I'm here.
Okay, we've got 1 minute. What's your observation, sir?
Well, I agree. I don't trust the government.
I didn't ask you, did you trust the government? I asked you whether or not the government lies to us.
I know. I'm just putting it out there. But
I got
what
you.
I want to talk about is something else.
And what is that, sir? We have 1 minute.
Okay. You know, to me, you know, this 9/11 that we're sort of like, you know, memorializing, and I realize it's a serious thing. People lost lives. But to me, I'm gonna put a different twist on it, and I'm glad I'm not a radio host like yourself.
Okay.
You would get emails and all kind of letters, but anyway, I look at it. You know, they said the Titanic was unsinkable.
Yes, they did.
I look at the Trade Center; those two buildings, twin towers. People thought that they couldn't come down.
Right.
No matter what.
That's right.
But they both came down, and I want to refer to the first responders. They're considered heroes, which they did, but. What if I was a first responder that, say, was a Christian or, you know, and said, and looked at the situation, both buildings on fire and, you know, all the confusion, but I'm looking at it and said, well, this building's coming down. Why should I, you know, people are dying and, you know, inside and everything, but it's coming down. Why should I run in there and die today? You know?
Well, that's the ultimate question. That's the ultimate question, George.
Would I be considered a coward?
You could be, maybe not. I'll tell you what, I will pose that question on the other side as well. That's an excellent question. Yours and Patty's question will be taken up in the next hour as we continue to deal with the subject of 9/11. We've got two phone lines open. No, one right now. 1-888-367-5329. You guys sound interested? We will open this can up. I am still asking you, do you know, have you been able to identify who it is that wrote the speech? This is the Monday edition of Lifeline. Your host, Jesse Gistin. I'll be right back. And I'm glad to be with you. We have stirred the thoughts of many here in the Bay Area on the subject of 9/11. We have earnestly and respectfully set forth our condolences and our concerns for those who were legitimately and authentically affected by that horrific day. The tragedies of that day are still stupefying for all of us. And yet, what I propose to you, my listening audience, for which a number of you have responded, is the question, are we unpatriotic to query or enter into the investigation of the 9/11 Commission, because many of us, and particularly those litany of people of whom I had spoken earlier, family members who lost loved ones in 9/11, first responders, firemen and police officers and your medics who were there, individuals who worked in the World Trade Center, both buildings, who gave testimonies about things, police officers, congressmen and senators, and particularly people who worked on the 9/11 Commission, that are giving their concerns and arguments that our government did not do as careful a job as they ought to have explained to the satisfaction of our nation that it understood the full scope of ramifications, as well as giving us a satisfactory answer that is necessary for the hearts and the minds of people that lost so much during that time. And I'm actually particularly trying to exercise your senses on this particular fact. You professed Christians. Are you so wrapped up in a principle of consensus that suggests or implies that as long as your side or your team, whether you're Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, their talking points are just enough for you to simply rest and quell all of your God-given skepticism and concern about the facts being laid out there? Are you a liberal who is upset because this happened under George Bush's watch? Are you a conservative that's upset because we're still bringing to the table the events that occurred under George Bush's watch? I still ask those of you who are Christians, if you are interested in this subject, are you satisfied with the answers that have been given to us officially by our government concerning how in the world you can have three planes flying that long in the air attack some of our major buildings without being shot down by fighter jets that are allegedly supposed to be watching our nation 24/7? What occurred? What kind of failure occurred that would not apprehend and stop these planes that were in the air for way too long a time? Somebody was not watching. What about building number 7, that mysterious building that collapsed with what appeared to have been an already staged set of explosives that pulled it down? What about the people that knew that it was coming down, that talked about it coming down before it actually came down, who were on the site at the time? What about the British news reporters that spoke to its coming down in their own time zone before the building actually came down? What about the stand down policy of our government and military that everyone knew was in effect for 8 months, or at least for 4 months, from June 1st, 2001, up through the time of 9/11? How do you have a stand down that long where your planes don't automatically, I'm talking about our protecting fighter planes, don't automatically take to the air when we find that there is the least bit of suspicion on the part of someone that could have possibly taken over a commercial plane? These questions and more. What about individuals like Clark, the guy that was part of the government for 30 years, who said the 9/11 Commission has so many holes in it that it's almost laughable? His testimony to the fact that he had warned the Bush administration, particularly Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of Defense, time and again, all the way up to September 4th, 2001, with explicit emails saying, you gotta watch out for Bin Laden. And they just simply did not respond. Reason would say, you just can't be that dumb. Something went wrong. But more than that, I'm asking you, who wrote this most eloquent speech? Who warned us about a monolith of ruthless conspiracies that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence, on infiltration instead of invasion, on subversion instead of elections, on intimidation instead of free choice, on guerrillas by night instead of armies by day? It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised. Who made that quote? Let's go to line one and talk with Angela. Angela, are you there on line one? How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm doing well. Are you enjoying the show?
Pardon me?
Are you enjoying the show? Sound like you're doing something else.
I'm driving to work. I just pulled over.
Okay.
I know who made the speech. It was President Kennedy before he died.
It was President John F. Kennedy. Now, Angela, when you hear that speech read again by yours truly, can't you tell that the president was warning the nation about surreptitious parties, secret groups, secret powerful entities that were not only operating outside of our country, but inside of our country, of whom he knew that he possibly was going to lose his life even for giving that very speech that he did?
Yes, and I believe that's exactly why he lost his life.
I do too. I do too. And as a statesman and as a watchman on the wall, as the leader of the free world, he made it very clear that free people do not tolerate secret societies, secret oaths, secret groups that work in such a covert fashion that it undermines the very nature of our country as a free country and our constitutional rights. For once we allow these types of groups to prevail in such a fashion as they did, they are virtually unstoppable, and the kind of tragedies that occurred like 9/11 was inevitable.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you have any other contribution to the program? Thank you for answering that, because I don't think I've gotten anybody else who called in who wanted to answer that, which is tragic, you guys, because the speech was powerful. It was clear. It was poignant. It was decisive. And President John F. Kennedy died for it. They destroy dissenters. They silence people who speak out. You're going to tell me we're in a free country? Let me go to line three and talk with Mercy while we continue to answer the phone lines. Mercy, are you there? Percy, Minister Percy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
And what's going on, brother?
I would have thought it was Colin Powell.
Who is that?
The one that gave the speech.
Oh, okay. Now, you
when
know,
I heard the answer, I would have thought it was Colin Powell.
What, trying to let us know something ain't right in Washington?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, listen.
In the military, you see a lot of stuff that you can't talk about.
That's right. This is very true, isn't it, sir? Yeah, but you know, if I don't think Colin Powell, because in fact he was a military general, I don't think he would have had the liberty to do it.
No, he would have still been on the National Security Act.
Exactly. So he did what he did by keeping silent, able to leave the office once that whole fiasco took off. And he was smart enough not to run for the president, because he understands there's a gag order when you become president, right?
Yeah.
Do you have any other observations to make? Answer to question hard to understand. Okay, tell me what's going on.
Yeah, something else. I can't remember what the comment
was. I asked about 9/11, whether or not it was unpatriotic for us to be questioning the fact that 9/11, the 9/11 official account given to us by the government, is inadequate. That are we unpatriotic, Minister Percy, for us to, as free people under constitutional rights, to investigate and demand that we get all the information essential for a clear testimony of what took place before, during, and after 9/11? Are we unpatriotic because we believe that conspiracy could have been an element that broke down our security and allowed those people to die on that day?
No.
All right, I agree with you, my brother.
Yeah, because you got one example clear that never been made clear was the Kennedy assassination.
100%. Listen,
around the bush how everything, that was like Oswald. Ruby couldn't walk in without you walking and killing men on TV.
Listen, I thank you for the call. I've got to take a hard break. Thank you for that, Minister Percy. The number is 1-888-367-5329. Modder, hold on. Doc, hold on. Bruce, you better make sure that you are talking reasonably clear today, or else I'm gonna open the floor up and let the trap door swallow you up. What do you think, folks? Is this a legitimate topic, or are we going to rule the day that because we stuck our head in the sand, we'll wake up one day and all of our freedoms will be gone, just as President Kennedy warned us that it would? Yes, we are, and we are enjoying our discussion around these matters. I want to go to line two and talk with Mara in Emeryville. Mara, are you there?
Yes, Pastor, I am.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Good. What's your observation on our particular approach to 9/11? Do you think that in questioning these things, particularly in relationship to the fact that I've already disclosed that this eloquent speech that was rendered by President John F. Kennedy, for which we believe, many people believe, he lost his life because he was trying to warn the American people of a subversion process that had its origins in Europe, i.e. Russia and Germany and other places where they infiltrated our country through espionage and through education and politics and business, and that basically took over the government. And he tried to warn us about these monolithic groups, and
yes.
And here we are suffering the consequences of it. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that the 70s, 80s were a blur on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw Fahrenheit 9/11. I think that the only way that the Bush administration could allow this one world government to happen is if they had to have a catastrophe. I think it was planned. I think that as far back as the Rockefellers and earlier than that, there's an elite that has been engineering our society for quite a while.
Yeah, and they're all professionals today working in the media, working in our politics, particularly, Mara, working in our banks, working on Wall Street. They're in the administration right now, all the way to the top. They go beyond that because the banking system is basically the White House of the world today.
Absolutely. And our currency, we have lost our status that we had as being the world's greatest currency, and I think that that's going to open the door alone to just a lot of bad things. As our sovereignty as a nation.
Yeah, our sovereignty is we've been sold as a nation. Technically speaking, Mara, there are so many foreign interests in countries that own real estate here in America through the sales of our government for the last several decades that if the American people knew it, they'd understand that the debt that we really have incurred is far more than $7 trillion. We are into the multiples of trillions of dollars, and it will never, ever, never, ever return that way again. Now, we might be deceived, Mara, by a small bubble boom over the next several years because, like any good bookie, we can make it appear like we are coming out of a recession, but in fact of matter, we're not coming out. We're descending even further.
Well, if you've got control of the pen, you know, you can make it look the way you want it to look.
And that's extremely important when you've already bought the media and have bought politics where we can do that.
We've been dumbed down. Our people have been dumbed down so much that, you know, I listen to people talking, it's all sports. It's like either they're afraid to face it as a nation, we're afraid.
Right.
You know, we better wake up because they're changing our Constitution. They're trying to.
Yeah.
I took a business law class, and I quit because it was so fake, and it was told, it said in the book, to buy a new version the next year because things would be changing.
Right. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Now, the reality is we have been functioning, Mara, outside of a constitutional premise for many, many decades. That's the reality of it. The Constitution has not been observed by presidents all the way back before Richard Nixon. Anytime a president declares a war on another nation, the constitutional principles are set aside, particularly in the interest of the safety of the nation. And so we can do things that can be justified judicially because Constitution set aside. But without a doubt, our constitutional rights have been apprehended. And Judge Politano, his name is Judge Napolitano, he wrote a book. I'm going to actually talk about his book today, Napolitano. And he says the lies that our government has told us, and he goes into the constitutional aberrations that take place in our government frequently. He gives us seven lies that our government constantly tells us. Here's what they are, folks. Here are seven lies out of 17 that are in his book, lies that our government tells us. Here's the first one. Tell me, is this not comical? Every vote counts. That's a lie.
That's a lie.
Watch this. It's only a temporary government program. That's a lie. That goes way back to Lyndon Johnson. Here's another one. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help you. That's a lie. Watch this. We're winning the war on drugs. You see how this is so comical. Here's another
lie
thing.
Lie after lie.
Exactly. Now watch this. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty. Isn't that conspicuous? Ask all the brothers, Latino, African American, and what have you, in prison that are you know, there because of a presumption of guilt versus a presumption of innocence. Here's another one.
Absolutely.
The right of the people to be secure in their person, houses, papers, effects shall not be violated.
Yes.
That's another world, isn't it?
Yes,
and here's the last one before I let you go. America has a free market system.
Oh, wow.
In other words, economics on Wall Street is purely a wide open business. Nobody has any advantages. Nobody has any inside tracks.
This free trade, when this free trade agreement happened in the 90s,
yes.
Back then I saw problems because, you know, we were just... I knew Japan had done the same thing. Like, things were so expensive when I went there. It's because they had to have everything imported.
Without a doubt.
So that's what where we've gone. That was under
the Clintons, and that was under the Clintons, Sister Mara. And
yes.
and this is why I say, when I talk to people, people don't like me when I talk politics for this reason.
No.
They can't pin me down as to being a conservative or a liberal, a Democrat or a Republican. They can't pin me down. And they won't, because I understand the dialectical process. I understand how that both parties, while they have on different color shirts, are working for the same team.
Oh, absolutely.
And once you understand, you understand that the smoke and mirrors of arguments and debates are all part of the subversion process and the tactic of misinformation. That's what's going on. So we ought to get behind the scenes and deal with the truth. Listen, thank you for your call.
Can I ask you one quick question?
Yes, you may. Yes, you may.
Do you remember the movie Black President?
Let's see, who was in that?
From the 70s. I forget, but this is playing out the same way.
Yeah, I was just sharing. You know what I was sharing with? I was sharing with a friend of mine, Mara, that all of our presidents since John F. Kennedy have been Manchurian candidates. You know that, right?
No.
Yeah, Manchurian candidates. Picked, groomed, prepared for the agenda, told what to do. And I've told everybody this before, we operate out of a neo-Roman republic, and that is, our president is a Caesar. He doesn't run the government. His job is to keep the wars going.
That's right. And the wars are getting us in debt to an enemy country. What are we, crazy or something?
Yeah, well, you know what? God is in control.
And it will
all work out. Listen, thank you for your call. God bless you. You guys want to talk about this? Or you want to keep sticking your head in the sand, stirring your thoughts on this? We don't have to answer anything today, but at some point we will have to give an account to what we know, what we don't know, and what we think we know. Let's go to line one and talk with Doc right now, patiently waiting.
Pastor Jesse, how are you?
I'm good. What's your observation, my brother?
Well, I am concerned with the blessings that secular leaders prey on the society. The president was at the 9/11 memorial, and he prayed to the God of Jacob, and the Mayor Giuliani prayed, and another gentleman sat up there and prayed. But, you know, I'm just concerned with how much can you put in a prayer of a person that's rooted in a worldly, is rooted in the world and not with a biblical point of view. There was so much stake about whether they should pray or whether they don't pray. I was glad, on the other hand, to hear the president pray, but would believers take account that as being the right thing? I mean, since he's rooted in the world, that was just a question I don't know where to go with.
Well, it's a good question. I would tend to think that on particularly Christian radio stations that around the nation that are smaller markets, they might have taken note of President Obama's prayer and Rudy Giuliani's prayer as well, because I heard part of his prayer, and people were taken aback that he even did it when, you know, what was to take place on the 9/11 memorial was a complete abstinence on the part of evangelicals and Catholics. This is more of an ecumenical thing. So what you can view the 9/11 memorial as is the ancient Babylonian golden idols, of which Nebuchadnezzar told everybody to bow down and worship, sort of your ecumenical calling on the gods, as it were, to bless us and to bless the families that were smitten on 9/11. We certainly wouldn't, as Bible-believing Christians, suggest or affirm that form of prayer as being legitimately Christian. You know that because those folks are forbidden to say in Jesus' name. So essentially, they're giving a little homage because it was a very sacred area. Some real tragedies occurred, and they weren't going to just play their secular colors on this event without suffering great consequences at the polls. So they did what you and I know politicians do.
Yeah, I think that's right. And when I heard the prayer, what came to my mind was there's scripture in the Bible that says a lot of people say Lord, Lord, and God, God.
That's right.
And won't enter in. So
that's right.
I was staring at that.
I think I agree. I think I agree with you completely, my friend. Thank
and
you.
Now, just one last thing here. Regarding 9/11, I'm impressed with the fact that there was one lady that said there was Christians that died, and why did the Christians die? Now, I don't know that I'm answering that question, but what I do say about 9/11 is that while there was a lot of carnage and a lot of death, there was 10 times more people that were saved by the fact that they did not go to work, and I count that as miraculous and divine intervention. While on one hand, you know, the people that lost something, I understand their pain, but it could have been tens of thousands. So I think that there's a testimony for God there.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt, my brother, and I think that came out as I was talking earlier in the program, that when a tragedy occurs, that scarlet-colored thread of God's mercy and providence always shows up. The perspective that it could have been tens of thousands as opposed to 3,000 is indeed the mercy of God. The folks that did die, we don't take anything away from the weight and gravity of that at all. And with regards to my sister who called and asked the question, when people, you know, laud the providence of God in saving people out of the midst of what was otherwise a certain doom, a certain demise, God saved us, God saved us, it does beg to ask the question, did God save the rest that died? So what we always want to do is this as Christians, don't get over excited about the fact that God let you live today, as if him taking the other people wasn't him actually ushering them into absolute bliss, perfection, cessation from any pain, suffering, the totality of their redemptive calling, and all the blessings that come with dying. Because if we deny that death has no more sting and that all it is a door into glory for us, then we misrepresent the gospel, and then we also misrepresent what God is doing. So yes, we got to be careful. It's like folks that says God's on our side because we won the game. Well, he's not on the other people's side because they lost the game. This is not a Christian worldview. A Christian worldview will take it to its highest order and say, you know, some of those people definitely went straight to glory. Others faced the judgment of God, without a doubt. And those that survived, some of those that survived, who knows, they may be living more lives of debauchery today than they ever did before. And will have to face God with more accountability now than they did prior to that account. Those are good questions. Thank you, Doc. We got to take a break. When I come back, I'll deal with you, Bruce. I'll deal with you, Mark. And Deborah, you hold on too. We will tie this up after this. All right, we've got about 13 minutes to go in this program. Really fascinating discussion, of which we haven't even scratched the surface, because I didn't even go into the details about the 9/11 protesters, who are legitimate and authentic individuals who merit a hearing. I don't know if you ever heard of an individual named William Rodriguez. William Rodriguez. He was a janitor in the 9/11 fiasco, debacle, that experienced the destruction of one of the Twin Towers. He was in the building when it happened. He testified to the fact that there was an explosion underneath him on the ground level, five floors before ground level where the streets are, that caused the building to begin to topple, of which he couldn't get a hearing from the government. He couldn't get a hearing from anyone. And only C-SPAN, what our sister was saying earlier, only C-SPAN spoke to the issue of allowing William Rodriguez to actually come on the air. But just like our sister was saying, that you can hear a lot of this information on C-SPAN. Well, ain't nobody watching C-SPAN. When the last time you watched C-SPAN? That stuff is so boring, it's not even funny. But that's how the enemy works. He'll allow the truth to be spoken on venues and settings where very few people are watching, because all he needs to do is make sure that the mainstream media continues piping out the propaganda and putting the people to sleep. Let's go to Bruce on line four. Bruce, you have been angelically patient today. What's your observation?
Hey, the angel I saw was 100 foot tall, but I am patient. Hey, but you know what? He told me it was time for judgment to start in 1990. But, you know, I just want to say this, Jesse. First of all, you know, people make me feel different, but you just made me feel like a man in a cotton field before Lincoln became president.
I like that metaphor.
A white man with a whip in his hand. That's what you're, the way you're treating me. Not with respect, you're judging me. You're treating me different than everybody else because maybe I'm not well-educated like the slaves were in those cotton fields, and people used to just whip them instead of talk to them. But I'm just saying, this is what I got to say. Now, Jesus gave prophecy, too, and they killed him on a cross. He talked about the last days, so did Daniel, Zechariah. They all did. There's a special gift, but we have billions of false prophets. And the other thing is chapter 11, the book of Revelation. Are you still there, Jesse?
Yes, I am.
You already talked about a trapdoor. I thought I was already through. Hey, but anyway, so, you know, chapter 11, the book of Revelation, the two witnesses come back. Now, some people think, you know, the argument, Enoch, Elijah, Moses, pick two out of three. But, you know, it's Satan that comes up to kill those. He's the only one can kill the prophets of God. But I'm just saying, you know, Jesus allowed himself to be crucified. Rome knew that. He could have stopped at any minute he wanted, but he had to die for us.
And that's right.
Okay, but the other thing is this, you know, Jesus cast out demons, a legion of demons into a herd of pigs. I'm just saying, and there were men breaking chains that they were put in because of their demon possession, but I'm just saying, you know, the demons now know it's the last days. I mean, how can you take a whole civilization of people that aren't Christians and teach them to put bombs on their children's waves and tell them to go out and blow it up?
Demonic.
You know, while they're wearing it, it's demonic.
Demonic.
It's all demonic, but it's everywhere. I mean, you've already taken the, you know, Christianity out of our public schools. I mean, children are just radically stupid now because they can't believe in God, because it's politically incorrect. Nobody else does it. I mean, all those cliches they use of why they don't believe in God or what their alternative things are that they might be doing instead of going to hell or heaven. But, you know, I'm just saying that we have to watch ourselves, because the mark of the beast. I mean, right now in the Sudan, you couldn't get a loaf of barley bread for a day's wage. I mean, all those people are dying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the prophecies are all being fulfilled.
Yes, they
and
are.
The first
listen.
Thing you have to take away is the money.
Yes,
give us the mark of the beast.
Listen, you, Bruce.
I am.
Bruce. Bruce is breaking up. Oh, sorry, Bruce. You're not on because you've broken up, but listen to me, Bruce, before I go to my next call. You have spoken eloquently from a prophetic perspective on the things that are taking place, without a doubt. Although I discount and reject your analogy that I view you as a slave out in the field, and I'm whipping you simply because I tell you to make sure your thoughts stay grounded, my brother. That's only respectful for our listening audience. What time do I have before we go to break? Are we okay? Okay, good. Let me go to line three and talk with Deb before I talk with Mark. Deborah, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm okay.
Okay, what's your observation?
Well, I just wanted to know what you thought about President Reagan. Do you think he's just one of these presidents like everybody else?
Well, he was.
Oh, well, I'd like to discuss that with you sometime, but
okay.
There isn't time now.
No, it's not. We all have our beloved candidates, no doubt about that, but the evidence is out already that President Reagan was a globalist as well. He had a very strong contemporary Republican and conservative aura and spirit of the times, where during the times that he was president, nationalism was high, patriotism was high, and sovereignty and America was high, without a doubt, but he understood what is called triangulation, and he also had people that he was working with that he knew that he had to continue fighting wars to break through the stranglehold of different geopolitical nations so that we could continue this global agenda that's taking place. And you can find in the archives on the internet him speaking of a new world order verbatim. So I'll talk to you later. Let me go to line two and talk with Mark and consume the rest of our time with Brother Mark. Brother Mark, what say you about 9/11? We've got about 6 minutes, and let's have a cogent conversation because I know you are full of the matter.
Well, on a spiritual level, it was the sixth trumpet. On the physical level, it was, hopefully you'll interview William Rodriguez. I'm a janitor myself, and that is a powerful story. That would make a great...
I would love to talk with William Rodriguez. If you could get a hold of him, we could have a conversation with him and let the audience listen to his own account.
Yeah, because President Bush gave him this award for saving all those people, and then he turned around and wants him arrested because he found out it certainly was an inside job. Today, Alex Jones interviewed Luke Rutkowski, who's head of the, one of the great leaders of the We Are Truth movement, that it was an inside job. And they were not allowed on Ground Zero because they had their t-shirts that said it was an inside job. They're turning it around, calling the good people the bad people, saying that we are terrorists. And Luke Rutkowski has this movie where the security guard of the owner of the World Trade Centers and Building 7 is threatening Luke Rutkowski as being a terrorist and calling the cops and saying, oh, I'm going to tell them you got a bomb in your backpack.
I understand that. Hold on, Mark. Let's spend the last few minutes with a cogent, grounded conversation, lest all of these thoughts discredit the whole conversation. Let's start from the top. Let's make some very clear assertions. When you talk about 9/11 being an inside job, that's such a canopy of a statement. Let's make a few observations, and maybe we can have one more conversation down the line. For the record, be clear, be sure of this. That when you say it's an inside job, you have to be speaking from a very clear and grounded perspective. One cannot suggest or assert or imply that there weren't terrorists, that there weren't planes that crashed into those buildings, right. that was not a legitimate act of terrorism. One might suggest or assert that the stand down principle that took place for several months before opened the door for these terrorists to come in and do what they did when our government, and this is already in the report, knew that there was a possibility of a terrorist attack with planes attacking the Twin Towers and other important institutions in our country. They knew that, and yet somehow these enemies got through. And in that light, you might be able to argue for an inside job. But what other information do you have?
Well, for one thing, the 9/11 Commission report, 6 of the 10 guys said that it was not a full report because Building 7 was not mentioned, that was dropped that
completely
day without a plane hitting.
Completely.
That's
now,
a very important point.
Completely. Now, hold on. We agree with that. You and I agree with that. Let the record be stated by our audience that we agree that they completely dropped Building 7. Building 7 is the red herring. You have to deal with Building 7 or you have no integrity. All right, give me something else.
Well, the heat of the beams, 6 weeks later, the firemen testified it was like lava. It was still 1,000 degrees hotter than the hottest part in the fire. Jesse Ventura, I keep getting you mixed up with Jesse Ventura. You're Jesse Castan, right?
on the second point with which our friend Mark is speaking, I agree with you. That evidence several weeks later of the extreme heat of those iron beams being melted cannot be done away with by pilot fuel. Okay, we've got that one. That's number three.
Okay, the guilty demeanor of Dick Cheney, who for 10 years has been passing off the lie that a plane hit the Pentagon.
Ad hominem attack. Drop the guilty demeanor of Dick Cheney, because Dick Cheney looked like that from the day of his birth. Give me another argument.
Maybe, but the point is the FBI stole the cameras when the missile hit the Pentagon so that we can't watch the missile hit the Pentagon.
Point number four, our speaker says that in the Pentagon, when the plane crashed into the Pentagon, because the cameras were removed so quickly and the whole area was cleaned up within a few days, few weeks, it begs the question, what was our Pentagon hiding? Those are four salient arguments for a reevaluation of the whole 9/11 commission. One more before I let you go.
RadioLiberty.com, InfoWars.com. Stan Monteith and Alex Jones have been fighting this for 10 years. They've been saying it's an inside job. I just learned it 2 years and a few months ago, but it's certainly overwhelming evidence, 100% to zero, that it was an inside job. I hate to say it. because, you know, the guilty culprits, George Bush, I hate to say it.
Hey, listen here, Mark. Mark, listen to me.
What?
We got to take a break because our time is up. You have made your points. I've got to let you go. We'll talk about this again. Thank you, Mark. I did that for Mark as well because he's been wanting to say that for the longest. It's not a complete open and shut case. When you use reason and you use logic, what we know is there's a high likelihood and probability that major mistakes were made because they were setting things up for where you and I are right now, a country that is no more free than any country in the world based on fear and future intimidations and threats. This is the Monday edition of Lifeline. I enjoyed the time with you. We'll be back next Monday, see if we can talk about some other things. I just want to remind you, we got to keep our eyes open and make sure the information that you listen to on the radio or anywhere, if you can, validate it. Remember what the scripture says, prove all things.